is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.
And welcome to the Monday edition of Game Misconduct. I'm Don LaGreca. He's Anthony Pusick. And also joining us, as he does every Monday, is the great EJ Raddick from the NHL Network. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Good Monday morning to you guys. And, boy, the Rangers are playing really well. What can I say? That was a big game Saturday night, from what I make of it. It was an entertaining game. A lot of Ranger fans at the Rock. I'm sure Devil fans weren't too happy to see that, but that's the way it goes.
Yeah, the energy was really good, and it was a lot of fun, and something that's kind of flown under the radar, probably because it's more of a Ranger thing than anything else, but, you know, points in 15 consecutive games to start the season for Artemi Panarin is pretty impressive, and that's the most in the history of the organization.
Yeah, that's really impressive. I mean, he's got off to a great start. I thought he had an interesting comment the other day. He said, the coach gave me a new workout regimen. He goes, I don't really want to do it, but I'm doing it. And, hey, listen, if I were you, I would keep doing it because, I mean, he's played very, very well to start the season. And as, you know, players get a little into their 30s, I mean, it becomes harder and you have to work harder. It's as simple as that. So it's paying off. Whatever he's doing is paying off because he's been terrific through these first 15 games. And so the Rangers, even with injuries to key players, they just keep rolling along. And, I mean, 12-2-1 start is very, very impressive.
Yeah, I thought it was just the hair.
Well, he's lighter.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah. Well, Jack Hughes' comments after that game I thought were interesting, EJ, just saying good teams win those games. And I think the Devils are realizing with the way that they've started off this season, coming off of the surprise season they had last year, that they are missing something, whether it's just the goaltending or just not playing up to the level that they expected to, taking that next step. And I know they're out Nico Hischier and Jack Hughes just came back, but you're clearly starting to see in that locker room that they're feeling a little bit of pressure to get things going here.
Yeah, it's higher expectations for the team this year, right? A lot of people were talking about the Devils maybe being ready to take another step, maybe to win the East, maybe to be a really legit Stanley Cup contender. I mean, they've got a really energetic young team there with some high-end players, but they've had some injuries and they've had some defensive woes so far. They got to defend better, and I think this all comes with, you know, a team trying to kind of find its way over time. Mm-hmm. You know, I've seen it happen with many teams that, you know, the expectations get raised, and, you know, this is a hard league. 32 teams on a night-to-night basis, everybody's got a chance to win, and people are looking at the Devils now. They're not taking them for granted. So it's definitely going to be challenging for them this year. But, I guess, you know, for Jack Hughes' standpoint, yeah. I mean, you should find a way to win a game. You have a lead in the third period. But, it's still early, and they've got to just kind of right their ship a little bit and probably defend a little better and get some guys back healthy and hopefully lean on the goaltenders a little bit more.
And this is the scar tissue we were talking about earlier in the season, EJ. This is what builds up a championship team. And even though the Rangers are not a championship team, they've been through the wars a lot longer than this Devil team. So when they lose a Fox and they lose a Heedle, and they have calls go against them like they did on Saturday night, where it looks like there's going to be a five-minute major and it's taken off the board and a couple of breaks don't go their way, it seems like the Rangers rise to the occasion, and a team that's maybe not used to it doesn't. And that's kind of what happens. You kind of learn from that. Rangers weren't always that way, but all the years of having to play in the playoffs and playing with injuries, it builds up that scar tissue where it almost makes you stronger, and that's what the Devils have to develop right now. It's a young team with a lot of expectations on it. They're banged up, and they haven't responded. Maybe they'll learn from that.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I look at them this year. They haven't been necessarily a great 5-on-5 team this year. They've ridden a lot on a strong power play. They've just got to be better as a group, and some of the new pieces have to fit in a little bit better. They got to get healthier, but I just think on the whole they need to play better as a team. I mean, they've been a team that is, you know, that they've shown they can score and they can be dynamic offensively, but can they defend well enough when they have to? I mean, there's a great example the other night. They had a lead in the third period and they couldn't lock it down. So these are the things that, you know, Lindy Ruff and that group over there, they have a really good, smart group of hockey people, and they understand it. And Jack said as much, in that comment. I mean, you know, good teams find a way to win. Good teams find a way to close those games out, and it didn't happen. So they've got some work to do, but, you know, they've got a lot of really good young players there. So I mean, I think they're going to figure it out. They're going to be a problem as the season goes on.
Something else in the Metro that caught my eye on Saturday, Capitals beat the Blue Jackets 4-3. Two questions, I guess. One, how impressed are you with how well the Capitals have played of recent? And two, Blue Jackets, line A scratched, healthy scratch. They're reeling. They have not played well at all. They're 1-7-2 in their last 10. Looking like they'll be in contention with the Sharks for that top pick. Just not a good season for Columbus, especially with everything that went down before the season with Mike Babcock.
Yeah, well, first of all, I'm very impressed with the Capitals. And, you know, Spencer Carberry is a new coach there. He's never had a head coaching job in the National Hockey League. He takes over an older team. You know, they didn't start off particularly great, but, you know, they have found their way of late, and they're playing some much better hockey. And you got to give Carberry and company a lot of credit. I just think that, you know, to push to where they are, I mean, they're sitting there near the top of the division. It's pretty impressive. So they're finding ways to win on a night-to-night basis is what you have to do. They're flying. I mean, that's a team, I think, especially early in the year when you saw them, you were like, boy, this is going to be a struggle for the Washington Capitals this year. And yet, here they are, playing some really good hockey. So give Spencer Carberry a lot of credit. They've won four in a row. They've won some important games. You know, we'll see if they can continue that. And, you know, as for Columbus, you know, it's a challenge. I think they have some good young players there in their group that, you know, they can build around moving forward. I don't really, you know, they're not getting a lot out of Gaudreau and Line A right now, and so they've been benching them. They scratched Line A the other day. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I saw Buffalo go down this path with Jeff Skinner, and the coach ended up eventually getting fired, and Jeff Skinner eventually got back playing and was fine. So for me, you know, I think, you know, these guys are under contract, you know, particularly Gaudreau for a good long while. I mean, you better find ways to make it work outside of a scratch here or there or a bench. I think you could do that once, and then I think after that you've got to turn to the next way to find a way to get those players going. Because if you don't get them going, obviously it's a tremendous waste of money for your organization, and you know, in the end, I think the coaches are the ones that pay the ultimate price. Because, like I said, you know, Ralph Kruger couldn't figure it out with Jeff Skinner, and right. You know, they kept him in the press box, which made literally no sense. And you know, these guys have to be able to contribute for the Columbus Blue Jackets. And you know, for me, you might want to go the other way and really start riding these guys and giving them more ice time and trying to get them going. You got to find ways to do it. They're just you're not going to be able, you know, you're not going to be able to trade them. And you can't just have them sitting in the press box. So for me, it's going to be incumbent on you know, Pascal Vincent to figure that out, because you know you're not going to be scratching Patrick Laine on a nightly basis. You're not going to be benching Johnny Gaudreau for long stretches. I mean, the other night they're down the stretch in a close game, and they have both those guys on the bench. You know, I don't know. I just think that you paid them. They have a, you know, unless these guys just can't play anymore. In which case, you have to consider buying them out and moving on. But wow. I don't think it's reached that point. I just think you have to find ways. As a head coach, you have to find ways to get players moving.
What do you think Gaudreau saw in Columbus when he signed there?
Money. I mean,
there were other offers, that were comparable, weren't they?
Well, what do we know? What do we know, though?
Yeah, that's true.
What do we actually know about what those offers look like? You know, and where those places were. I mean, I think for, you know, listen, there was probably a lot of things that were impressive. First of all, Columbus is a nice city to raise your family, and you could go there. I like when I've been to Columbus. I think it's a nice place. So you might go there. You might be impressed by the city, and the building, and the practice facilities right there. And it's a nice place to live. So that's A. I mean, when you look at the team, I mean, you knew it was going to be a struggle. I mean, they're kind of in that. You know, they had a good team. They lost a lot of pieces through guys leaving via free agency. And so they're in the enviable path. They're trying to kind of rebuild on the fly. They do have some really good young players there. I love Fantilli. I think some of the other guys that they have in their group are pretty good. But they went out and signed, you know, they signed Damon Severson to a big contract. Damon is a good player, but is he worth the kind of money they're paying him? You know, but these are the things that teams do in a 32-team league where everybody's challenged to find players. That you know, you sign these contracts and then you you know, we've seen Damon Severson with the Devils for many years. He's a good player.
Yeah.
But he's got, there are positives to his game. Like, first of all, he's a terrific athlete. He's got good size. He can shoot the puck through the wall. I mean, he's got a lot of physical tools. He takes some risks during games. Mentally, I don't think he hits his strength during, you know, he'll make some mistakes. And those mistakes would a lot of times end up in the net. So, like, there's a guy. Like, they brought him in. So, like, he's going to have some ups and downs. And that's gonna be a challenge. Right now, they played Spencer Martin in their game against the Philadelphia Flyers last night. Spencer Martin is struggling to be an NHL goalie right now. So, you know, you take a team that's really, you know, not deep, that their stars are struggling. They've got some young players that are helpful players. They got some good players within their group. They can be competitive on a kind of a night-to-night basis, but, like, this is a hard league, and when the goaltending is just average and the defense is prone to make some mistakes from time to time and young players are up and down and your star players are struggling and your coach has never been an NHL head coach before, it's not a great mix, right, in a league, like I said. I mean, Philadelphia right now, they've won 5 in a row. So Columbus goes in there yesterday, well, you know, Philadelphia's playing well right now.
Yeah,
and so you get behind in the game, you get scrambling. So I don't know what the answer is for Columbus other than patience, but I think really at the end of the day, with Laine and Gaudreau in particular, I think you got to find a way to make those guys. You got to find a way to get those guys going in some way. And they've tried now to bench them in stretches in games. They've tried a healthy scratch with Patrick Laine. Boy, I just think you got to find some other ways to get them going, because what are you going to do with them? You know, you're not moving them, so
right.
Better figure it out.
Now, the other coach that could be in trouble is Lambert there in New York with the Islanders. They did salvage getting, you know, three. You know, listen, they 4 points in the last 3 games of the trip. Nothing to sneeze at, but at the same time, poor third periods, blowing leads. You just, I wonder how much is left in the tank for him and Lou in general too. We talked about this back on Friday, Anthony and I. Listen, Lou's great. He's a Hall of Famer. There's no question about it. But you can't keep changing coaches, right? And at one point, does Ledecky go and just say, is it time to just, instead of allowing Lou to make all the changes, having like major changes with Lou? I mean, are we to that point if things continue to fall apart, or it'll just be, you know, let Lou ride until he doesn't want to ride anymore?
That's a great question. I mean, that is really a great question. I mean, the Islanders had a couple of runs to the conference finals under different circumstances, right? A bubble season and then a shortened season where teams played within a pod, right? And they rode kind of that strong defensive play, good goaltending, and ended up playing, you know, they went to a game 7 with Tampa, I believe, one of the years. So, I mean, they were a hard out. But now that we've gone back to the full 82-game season, some of the players that were part of that have gotten a little bit longer in the tooth. And so it's some of the, you know, and they're not producing as much. I just look at the Islanders, and, I mean, they're really not in a great position. I mean, they're in that 7-11 position in the league where you're in the conference, you're not higher than 7th, you're not worse than 11th, so, you know, you're on a treadmill, kind of. You don't get better. The cap isn't a friend of theirs right now because of the, you know, they made some signings, and, you know, they're kind of, they don't have a lot of flexibility to do some other things. I don't think they're particularly fast up front in a league where speed is really at a premium. I think their defensive group is pretty good. Their goaltenders are obviously that duo of Sorokin and Varlamov might be, you know, they're right there with the Boston duo amongst the very best in the league. But, you know, I just think that, you know, this team, they need a little bit of a makeover up front. They need to be a little younger, a little faster. And, you know, I don't know how that's going to happen when you've been trading away, you know, picks. Mm-hmm. In the last several years. So we'll see what happens with management there. I mean, Malkin is the guy that has the money guy there. Ledecky is the guy that's kind of the face of things as in ownership. They've given Lou the ball to run with for the last several years. They have the new building. I mean, it's a great question. I just think, you know, they stay afloat with the fact that their goaltenders are good and the players are, you know, the roster is good enough to be around 500, and like I said, a 7-11 team. But, like, at the end of the day, is that what you want to be moving forward? Or, you know, do you think, like, this team is not a Stanley Cup contender for me, right now, and I look into the future, like, what do we see coming? So I think you have a great question, like, what is it going to be with Lou? He has had an unbelievable career, and he came into Long Island and did some really good things, and like I said, they've had some success, but I just think that they're in a bad place in terms of where you want to be in this league. You either want to be at the top, battling to win the cup, or you kind of want to be at the bottom and, you know, being in a position to draft and develop good young players and take that little bit of a hit over a couple of years to move back up the ladder. So I don't know if Lou is someone that's interested in doing that. So for the foreseeable future, it looks like they're going to be in that middle ground, which can be a frustrating place to be for fans.
And we were kicking this idea around on Friday as well, EJ. We know Lou is prone to making changes when he feels like the change will help. But everything that you mentioned about the roster and not being fast enough, not being young enough, clearly they don't have the top-end scoring that they thought they would in Wahlstrom. And Horvat hasn't exactly blossomed with Barzell. Does it even make sense to make a coaching change? Does a coaching change even help this team, given the way the roster is and the lack of flexibility? Why put an interim coach in that situation if Lambert can kind of just ride this season out?
Well, I mean, Lou is about trying to find ways to win all the time. I mean, that's just the way he's always been. And so even when those Devils teams were at the end of his run with the Devils, I mean, he would make coaching changes there to try to, you know, right. When those teams were kind of in a similar place. And so he might. I mean, you know, Lane is not somebody that inspires. He's not an emotional leader from what we can see from the press box and from being around it a little bit. But, you know, again, you're right. I don't think he's got a ton necessary to work with. I think it is kind of what it is for that group. They've got to work hard every night. They got to hope their goaltender plays well. They got to find a way to get some goals. They got to hope that Barzell is providing, generating offensive opportunity. And, you know, right now, Anders Lee, it's been a struggle for him at the start of the season. So he's got to get going. And you wonder, like, when you get guys into their early 30s, when the production starts to slide, there is that fear that, this is going to be the beginning of a downturn. So we'll see if that's the case. Anders has been a great captain for the Islanders, and he's been a really good player for them for a while. But, you know, there's been almost no production so far, and they certainly need him going, among others, if they're going to kind of, you know, wiggle their way up the standings. But I think the bigger picture questions for the Islanders are the ones that are, mm-hmm. you know, the ones you pointed out, Don, are the ones that are more interesting for this team. I mean, what is it going to be moving forward?
So, great games out in Sweden, some fun hockey in the afternoon and the morning. But coming out of that, some conversation about changes to the 3-on-3. Possibly having kind of like a half-court situation, not allowing teams to rag it back into the neutral zone, trying to make it less of a possession game. I don't know what that looks like, EJ. What were your thoughts about it even being talked about or toyed with at this point?
I don't think there's a big problem. I mean, you know, I guess some maybe this is maybe it's a good thing that these are the things we're talking about, right? Because I just don't see it as a huge problem. I mean, teams, when they possess, I mean, possession is key in 3-on-3. When teams possess it, they go back. But when we watch these games, I mean, for me, they're very entertaining, regardless. And, you know, I don't know. It doesn't seem to be broken, so I don't know why they want to fix it, but...
Well, we all know what's broken, EJ. What's broken is the fact that we have a shootout and there should just be ties. That's what's broken.
Yeah, we agree with that.
Well, I don't agree with that. I don't,
why?
I never want ties. I never
Come
want
on.
Ties. I never want ties. I just want, you know, listen, the game should all be of equal value. That's the problem for me, is that, and unfortunately, it makes it more complicated for people who are, you know, this is a league we're looking to make it easier, I would think, for fans, you know, wins and losses. Like, for me, there's two paths. The game goes to a shootout, team wins, it's 2 points for them, it's nothing for the other team. It's a win and it's a loss, period. End of story. Or you make it a more complicated system where every game is worth 3 points. Team wins in regulation, they get 3 points. Team loses in regulation, they get nothing. If you go to overtime, it's a 2-1 situation where the game is still worth 3 points, you know. So that's the thing for me. The regulation win would be more valuable, 3 points, and if you lose, you get nothing. So I mean, I don't want ties. I think the people pay a lot of money to go to a game to see a tie. I don't, and we see a lot of them. So not for me.
Well, I guess our issue with the whole, I just don't like the shootout. I enjoy the 3-on-3. Now, I don't want to see the game. The problem I have with wins and losses is that once you kind of compromise the game to go to 3-on-3, you shouldn't lose outright. So I don't mind having the point getting to overtime. But I'd like to extend the 3-on-3 if possible, 7 minutes, 8 minutes. Just cut down on the shootout because I'm with you. I don't think the 3-on-3 is broken. When I'm calling games, and you've called them too, I'm disappointed when the five minutes are over because I don't want to go to a shootout because it's not nearly as exciting as the 3-on-3.
Yeah, I agree. Listen, if they could extend it, that'd be great. I just think in an 82-game season, ice quality, the player association, there's a lot of challenges to getting that moved beyond that. Like, do we go to a lot of shootouts right now? I mean, what's the numbers this year?
It's a good question.
I don't know if it's any different since we've gone to 3-on-3 here early. But I guess my issue,
like anecdotally, I'm not seeing as many shootouts. Now we'd have to look and see what the percentage is. It just seems like we're not going to quite as many shootouts.
No, the Rangers, the 15 games they've gone to two. If I had to guess, I would think they're probably down. But I just don't like the shootout, and I don't mind ties. And here's why I don't mind ties.
Go ahead.
Is that, honestly, this is the one sport. We don't go by wins. We go by points. How many points does a team have? That ultimately determines where they finish in the standings. So you can look at it and say, boy, I kissed my sister. I went to a game, and I didn't see a winner. But isn't it better than going to a game and seeing your team lose? You got a point. You earned a point. You climbed the standings by tying. You got something for it. So I don't look at the tie as being that bad or that nothing was decided. Something was decided. You earned yourself a point, which is helpful because it's more about points in the standings than actual wins. Nobody asks how many wins do you have. They ask how many points you have.
Well, it's all logical. I just don't like the game ended in a tie. I mean, I think if you pay, you're paying $150 or $200 for a ticket, I think a shootout can be, while we maybe don't like it as a way to decide the outcome of a game, the bottom line is it is entertaining to watch. I mean, people don't leave. They don't, like, well, I'm out of here. I'm not watching the shootout. People watch the shootout. We've seen a lot of great shootout moments over the last 15 years or whatever that's been since we started the shootout, I guess, in, 05, 06. So, for me, I don't have a big problem with the shootout. It would be great if we could play. It would be great if they could just play 3-on-3 all night until there's a winner. That would be fun because I love watching the 3-on-3. But the problem for me is just that there's no equity in this with, games where there's, the games are just not all equal. Some games, there's like a regulation game is worth 2 points, an overtime game is worth 3 points. In the big picture of things, that doesn't seem to be equitable for me. Mm. So make them all, like I said, either make them wins and losses, and which is pretty straightforward. That we're always trying to draw people's attention to hockey. It's a lot less complicated for someone who doesn't know anything about hockey to say, they're 2 games out. Just like in all these other sports, it's pretty straightforward.
Yeah,
if you don't want to go that way, I get it. And but I just think that, like, a regulation win should have the value of 3 points. Because the other game, like, we see it. This is why the standings get clogged up, is because you have all these 3-point games in the mix. Now, all this said, that we're all talking here, it's all great. There is no appetite from anybody I've ever talked to at the league to change this. So
no.
This is where it is.
Well, that doesn't make it right.
EJ, we have a binder. If you want to join us in on this binder, we have a lot of stuff we're bringing to Gary's attention. So we'll have to. You have to come in with us.
Yeah, can you get us a meeting with Gary?
And you, Don, a man like yourself, you could just walk in, the commissioner's office, and sit yourself right down and wait for him to show up. I don't think that's an issue. But I don't think he will humor you. And then he will throw you out.
No, they love it. They do love it. But the one thing that I cannot stand, and listen, I've got an anger management problem. You've listened to me do talk shows. I can't control myself.
Listen,
You've been in the room when these things have happened.
I've been a part of it. Yeah.
Right. You've egged them on. You've encouraged it.
I've tried to set you off.
Right.
On several occasions.
Like a good co-host should. Absolutely. Anthony's going to learn that down the line too. But nothing irks me more, because the one thing the NHL and hockey in general have that they don't share with maybe any other sport, maybe besides soccer in North America, and that is to try to stay relevant and try to be in the conversation with general sports. So the one problem I have with this whole format is when I listen to a sports update, or it could be like I could be listening to 1010 Wins or some news radio that just kind of does a generic sports, and they'll say Devils beat the Rangers 3-2 when the game ended in a shootout or ended in overtime. Because you can't just give the score, right? You have to give.
That's right.
You have to give whether it happened in a shootout and even in overtime or even in a shootout, because now the shootout has less value in tiebreakers. But sometimes in the general sports landscape, and I see this sometimes on the bottom line too back in the day, where it'll just give the score and then you're fishing to find out, well, was it in overtime? Was it in a shootout? You don't want that either.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's all part of it. I mean, like I said, we can talk about it all we want. I just don't. Again, I've had these conversations over many years now. There's no appetite for the change. So, but you're right. That's true. It's like when you get a scoreboard, you have to. There needs to be a designation in a one goal game. You always wonder, was it a regulation? Was it a shootout? was it just an overtime game? But I back to your original question, though. I think the 3-on-3s have been very entertaining. We're always tweaking things, and I guess it's good the league is looking at things, and if they feel, that can be more entertaining, I guess, okay. But I think that usually these coaches and teams, you give them a template, and it starts out one way, and they figure out ways, It's not going to be just a crazy, like every night, it's not just going to be a crazy trading chances back and forth. Teams are trying to find a way to win the game, and sometimes it gets a little more tactical than maybe we would like to see, but many, many times it's still very, very wide open. I was at the Flyers and Vegas on Saturday afternoon, and that game was decided in overtime when Flyers took advantage of a turnover and made a quick play to the net and scored. I mean, I just think you're on the edge of your seat in overtime no matter what happens, even if a team is regrouping and going back. It's just like at any moment, things can happen so fast in a hockey game, especially when there's so much open ice. So, I don't have a big problem with it, but we'll see what happens with with what they're looking at.
Speaking of the NHL growing the game, they had the Global Series in Sweden. It was nice to see 2 p.m. hockey. Me and Don got to watch hockey while we were attempting to work, which was nice.
Yeah,
so,
like
EJ,
that.
Do you have your sunscreen? You have your hat ready? Because Austin Matthews wants to go to Mexico City. So, you think that's in the works for the NHL?
Yeah, I think it's probably in the works at some point. I mean, I think they should try to, go to different places. In the preseason, they went to Australia to play some games. I think it's great. If there's interest there, they should definitely go. You have a team in Dallas. You have a team in Arizona. These are places that are close to, that are close proximity to Mexico. So I think absolutely you're trying to grow the game. You should try to do that in the future. I think they'll probably look at it. I like this setup. In other years, they would go over to Europe and they would go to different sites and they would have two teams go. I love the idea of having four teams go to one site to play four games, because when you think about it, this summer I was over in Denmark, and when you get over into Scandinavia and into parts of Europe, you realize how close things are. And that was like a little hub in Stockholm for NHL fans to go. Like, if you lived in a lot of different places in that region, in that area of the world, you could get to Stockholm and go to a couple of games, and it was like a little mini hockey vacation for you, and I think it's great. We've had so many great Swedish players, and you saw a lot of them that participated in these games and members of their team. I mean, Nylander was like kind of the king of the whole thing. And I just thought it was—I thought it was way better than they've done it in the past for whatever reason. So I just like having the four teams in one spot playing a game, one game a day, and I just think it makes for a neat little hockey you know, pod, so to speak, for a couple of days in a place where people can come from different areas and different countries and go watch. I thought they really did a good job with it.
And before we let you go, you get a feeling that, you know, we'll have the World Cup of Hockey back and then the Olympic participation?
I think at some point, I mean, obviously the biggest issue is the geopolitical scene with the Russians, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, that's going to continue to be problematic, it appears, unfortunately. So we'll see what happens there. Maybe there was the talk of maybe a more limited World Cup-type format in February of 25. I do love the idea of playing anything that you do World Cup-wise in that window, like in that Olympic window, because... And we've played this down. These conversations I've had with you going back to when we did the radio show years ago is just like to play best-on-best hockey in September when you're going up against the NFL, Major League Baseball, you know, college football. There's just no room for to generate attention, in the, you know, for the sports fan in the U.S. But when you play that window after the Super Bowl, there's a little bit of a void there. And it's cold weather still in many, many places in the United States. And so hockey's a cold weather sport. And, you know, to have a best-on-best type tournament that the NHL would run, you know, in conjunction with the NHLP and a PA in a World Cup type format where they would control the venues and the start times and things of that nature. And you could sell it as a separate package. I've always thought that was important to remember. It's not a package that you have to sell to your current rights holders. You could sell it to someone else, and that's another form of revenue that you could generate. So I just think that's the window to do it. Obviously, I think fans are getting eager. We haven't seen the very, very best on best now for quite a while, I guess. You got to go back to the, you know, the World Cup was in, like, a 16.
Yeah, 2016.
14. Right, even that World Cup, they had the Team Europe, and then they had the Team 23, right, the Under 23s. It was kind of a little different format, but we haven't seen that true country by country best on best probably since the Olympics in 2014. Because in 18 they didn't participate, and in 22 with everything that was going on in the world and with the pandemic, it didn't happen either. So I think when so many good young players have come into the league in this last, you know, X amount of time here, this, you know, 7, 6, 7, 8 years. I think it will be fantastic whenever we do it. I think the league and the PA are certainly looking at, you know, investing more into the World Cup moving forward. But maybe in February of 2025, we could see something. And then, you know, the Olympics in 26. We will see how things play out. But I think there's definitely a hunger for those, among the players for sure, and definitely among fans as well who'd like to see it.
All right, man. Thanks so much for this. We really appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, EJ.
All right, listen, call, if you talk to Gary, tell him I said hi.
Well, listen, I think you should be in the meeting.
All right, well.
I think you should be
I've been in those meetings. I've been in those meetings, and I know how they end. So just, you know.
Well, maybe we can change history. How about that?
All right.
Thanks a lot, buddy.
Have a great week. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody.
Yes, happy Thanksgiving, buddy.
We'll talk to you soon.
All right, take care. That is the great EJ Raddick. He brought up Thanksgiving, Anthony, and we can't ignore, you know, we were talking about last week of where you are in the standings on American Thanksgiving ultimately dictate close to 80% of the time that if you're in the playoffs then that you will stay in the playoffs. So it's Monday, and American Thanksgiving is coming up on Thursday, so only a handful of games between now and then to determine ultimately who's got the best chance of making the playoffs.
Yeah, and right now, you've got Carolina and Tampa Bay in the wild card spots in the East, with Detroit and Pittsburgh both a point and 2 points back, and you've got St. Louis and Arizona, shockingly, but Arizona is tied with Anaheim, Seattle, and Seattle for with 18 points in that wild card spot in the Pacific. So that's a little a bit of a logjam there in the West. But as you know, as we know, there's a couple teams that have pulled away or at least gotten themselves solidified in their first place positions in their divisions. But there's been a lot of fun hockey, and it's been fun to watch this year. There's a lot of teams that are kind of surprising us. I think it's fair to say. I thought that Ottawa was going to be much better than they are, and they're 8-7. And the Ducks seem to be spunky, and they've found ways to win. And Arizona has found ways to win. Vancouver looks really, really, really good.
Really good.
And Vegas is kind of—I'm not going to say they slipped up here a little bit. I mean,
but they were playing at such a pace that you had to wonder if that was going to continue. And they've gotten bit a couple of times here down the stretch. One of the teams that has not, still only one regulation loss, Bruins, will be in Tampa to take on the Lightning. That should be a fun one tonight. The Lightning are starting to get going. They had a win over Edmonton over the weekend. Speaking to the Oilers, they'll be in Florida for the Panthers. Panthers have been hot. Your Rangers will be in Dallas to take on the Stars. I think this is an amazing test. Stars had a brutal loss against Colorado, had a tough third period. They had a 3-2 lead at one point, lost that game 6-3. But these are the teams, Anthony, that give the Rangers trouble, those big, thick, physical teams. You saw how they lost against Nashville earlier in the year. So this will be a tough test. It's a three-game road trip, four-game road trip, Devils, Dallas, Pittsburgh, and Philadelphia. So kind of a weird trip where Dallas is the outlier, like out of nowhere. You're flying halfway across the country to play the Stars. So kind of a disadvantage for the Rangers. This would be pretty impressive to me if the Rangers keep this streak alive, their 11-game point streak in Dallas against the Stars tonight.
Yeah, got to give credit to Rangers Muse on X. He said, or he posted, I should say, Igor Shesterkin against the Stars in his career, 4-0-1 with a .913 save percentage and a 2.60 goals against average if he gets the start. Igor has played well against Dallas, but you're right, Don. This is a bigger team, and the Rangers struggled against Nashville. Even in Minnesota, they had their struggles with their bottom lines and just how physical they are. The Rangers have done a really good job of handling their injuries. I find it amazing that Adam Fox is already back on the ice and skating before Filipedal, and Fox is on LTIR. And you saw it in that Devil game. Like, they did not, the Rangers did not play their best game on Saturday, but in the third period, they found a way. That Trocheck, Panarin, Lafreniere line continues to play well. Jimmy Vesey had probably the best game of his NHL career. The way he played, that fourth line, when nothing was going right, seemed to be the one to be the catalyst for their offense. They're gonna need performances like that until they get whole. And this is gonna be against a good, as we've pointed out, good Dallas Stars team, very deep, can score, kind of like the Rangers with almost every line. So it will be an interesting test tonight. I'm curious to see how it all plays out.
Yeah, it'll be interesting as well. We had somebody ask on social media about like where Hedl comes back. Where is he gonna play? He's not gonna play in the top six. You're not breaking up that Trocheck line right now with the way they're playing with Lafreniere and Panarin. He's going to have to go back and play with Kako and Cooley, and that's just the way that's going to be. But right now, I just want to try to get him back, that there could be a world in which Fox could come back before Hedl. You know, it's kind of scary there. Avalanche in Nashville will take on the Predators. Coyotes play host to the Kings. Flames at the Kraken. And those Canucks, they're home for the San Jose Sharks. So that's the schedule. Ready to do this again on Wednesday?
Let's do it.
All right, we can do it by interacting with you on Wednesday. We'll have a lot of social media presence on Wednesday at Don LaGreca or at Anthony Pusick. Hashtag Game Misconduct. We'll talk to you again on Wednesday. This was the Monday edition of Game Misconduct.
This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.